theme is clearly something about water. It begins and ends with water stories. And as I said at the greeting of the liturgy, water is the very source of life. Modern science seems to confirm all the more the evolutionary theory that maybe that's where we all came from, that at the earliest stages of God's creation, that the beings we are were anticipated. In any event, water is a source, a vital source of life. We can't survive without it. It sometimes washes away people's homes and dreams, and even takes life itself. God is so confusing. We never rest from trying to understand how God speaks to us through the mysteries of creation. In the first reading, remember this. The people who are angry at God and grousing and complaining to Moses are not a people who had never, you might say, tasted the power, the richness, the godliness of water. It was not all that long before that the waters were parted so that they might pass through the Red Sea, but they forgot, or they stopped believing as deeply as they had, because time had passed and life is tough, and so you need some other dramatic demonstration from God that God is there and you are God's. God loves you. So they fell to complaining again. In the gospel story, Jesus is talking about water that doesn't just quench thirst. He's talking about water that doesn't just renew life for a day or two or three. He's talking about a water that gives a life that lasts forever. And where is the mind of the Samaritan woman? She wants to argue about how he can get water without a bucket. Perfectly rational, is it not? Perfectly reasonable to challenge his claim that he can draw water, but of course he has no intention of trying to draw water from that well. He's talking about water he can give without having to go through these human mechanics, if you will. You don't have a bucket, first objection. And then, not yet believing, but just in case he might be telling the truth, okay, do it for me, man, show me, and save me work hereafter. I'd be so glad not to have to carry a bucket and make the trip to the well. Jesus is talking at one level, she's talking at another, and you'd be tempted to say, never the twain shall meet, except by the grace of God. There is a certain irony, of course, that these water readings, these reminders of God's way of speaking, which requires constant, renewed, unending effort on our part to get through our preconceived notions into the freedom of letting God speak freely to us and get God's meaning, not our own. There is a certain irony that we celebrate these readings and hear the word again when water, this time in the form of snow for the most part, is once again delighting children and devastating, even taking lives for many at the same time. The most mysterious, I think, of all God's messages, the central message which Jesus represents and tries to share with that Samaritan woman, is in the second reading. And it perhaps speaks to the obstacle between us and a real faith understanding of what God is saying and what God is doing. I want to read the words of Paul again, which Father Jeff just read moments ago. At the appointed time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for us godless people. It is rare, Paul says, that anyone should lay down his life for a just person, though it is barely possible a good man, that for a good person, someone might have the courage to die. How well he knows us and himself when he says it. And he is speaking to us. It is almost beyond our imagining that we would give our lives for people. And in fact, if we're completely honest about it, many, maybe most of us, would have a hard time giving our lives even for someone we loved dearly and who deserved the gift in our own estimation. And then Paul says, but in spite of all of that, it is precisely in this that God proves God's love for us, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. I don't think a preacher can come back too often to that theme because, as I've said in some variation of my present words, if I learned anything in 30 years as a priest, it's that as much as people want to, people don't really believe what Paul is saying. People don't really believe that they are already redeemed. Another touch of irony, early this morning I turned on the news to find out our weather conditions and heard a little blurb about the situation in Waco, Texas. And the news commentator said, some of those folks are afraid to leave that compound because it might mean being damned to hell. Some perverted version of some kind of gospel from a perhaps demented mind has filled these people with fear that they must blindly obey this false prophet or their salvation is at risk. And here's Paul saying what he's been saying through the generations. He's saying, your salvation's already guaranteed. You don't have to do anything except really believe in it and take hold of it and then act like people who live by such a belief. You don't have to earn redemption. You couldn't earn redemption even with your best pathetic efforts. Jesus died that you be redeemed. He did it, it's done, it's our reality. But we continue to be as if we were fish lying in a dry riverbed, wishing the river would come coursing down again. That's not our condition. We're in the ocean of God's love. We are already surrounded. It is our atmosphere, it is our reality, it is our universe, and beyond, God's love has already reached out. You might say, yeah, but I don't deserve it. That's what Paul said. No, you don't deserve it. And don't ever kid yourself into believing you do deserve it, because you never will deserve it, but you've got it. That's the tremendous truth that we dare not believe. And see, because we don't quite believe it, we don't effectively enough act, live, and breathe like a people who do believe it. Paul's words looks at us and he says, you know, you'd have a hard time, if you were given a real choice, you'd have a hard time laying down your life for a beautiful, good, sweet, kind, loving person. You'd have a struggle with that. And you'd sure have a heck of a time risking your life for some bum. But whether you think you're a bum, whether you think you're a worthless piece of nothing, no matter what you think of yourself, God in Jesus has already loved you and saved you. If you really believe that, you could let go of so much that keeps getting in your way. If you really believe that, if you were the free spirit in your own heart and mind that you are already, in the eyes of God, set free to be free, then maybe you could be about the momentous task of turning other people on with this truth, sharing this glorious reality. But it's not a problem of God. It's not a problem of God's giving. it's not a problem of God's caring, it's a problem of your willingness, your daring to believe this truth already. Maybe like the people at Meribah and Massah, your mind is so on today's thirst and today's inconvenience. Maybe like them, you've forgotten what God's already done for you. It's faded into memory because the problems of today are so up close and in your face. And so God, you feel, has to do something again. You want somebody to whack the baptismal font and make water flow from it, or you want somebody to do some spectacular sign in your presence so that you could believe. The signs have been done, the grace has been given, the reality is the truth. We are already saved. Maybe like the Samaritan women, we're still in the realm of buckets and things and money and daily problems and distractions. And so we can't even hear what this, perhaps until now, still stranger is saying to us. I am the living water, and you are the saved. If you could only believe that, if you could only be emotionally and psychologically and really freed by that good news, what a life-giving person you yourself would be in turn for others still struggling to believe, still trying to get hold of this. That's what I get from today's reading, that God has already done what men and women long to have done for them. God's already done it, but the people, we, the children of God, the people of God, we're still trying to believe it. The already real is still somehow or other elusive and intangible, not from God's side, but from ours. Dare to believe it. Let Jesus speak to you today with the same immediacy that he spoke to the Samaritan woman. Hear Jesus saying to you, I am who have already embraced you, I who have already called you into my life through baptism and confirmation, I am the living water. I am the font of life. Dare to believe it.